And welcome to Holden Village. Today is Wednesday, August 7th, 2002. Today's session is titled Building Bridges, Ministering to the Hispanic Community, Understanding the Traditions and Spirituality of Hispanic Immigrants. Presented by Luz Maria Cabrera. The tape number is CAL 2002-03. Let's listen in.
Because the classes have a sequence, but anyhow, let me tell you that yesterday we were talking that diversity in the United States has been increasing. If that is not reflect in the churches, then the mainstream churches still remain the same. And we say that. Even the ELCA set a goal to increase the numbers with people of color, at least as the population is increasing, it didn't happen. In the last 12 years, the numbers are exactly the same that they set the goal. And to summarize what I said these 2 years, it was that Christianity exists in the world. And the world as the world is. But even the globalization and diversity have been increased, and there are 2-5 phases of the same complex of economical and social political that it doesn't reflect on the churches. It seems like the church was where we draw from the world. And that's that way. I blame that, and that our children and grandchildren are walking out of our churches because they don't see what they are seeing out in the schools and with their friends. They don't see that reflected into the church. And that way, now that today's class is about Latino identity, and one of the most reflected identity, that is reflecting more our identity, is the spirituality. I told yesterday that Latinos, even that sometimes they leave the Catholic Church, they never leave the churches. They immediately start looking for another church. And then that's why the Catholic Church is seeing now their numbers decreasing. In the Pentecostal churches have been seeing their numbers increasing among the Hispanics. And now I want to say that also yesterday I said to those churches that want to start Hispanic ministries, how is important that we can see ourselves reflected into the church? Because when we attend churches, we don't see ourselves there. It's like we were as invisible as we are in the society. I told you today that we don't see ourselves in the movies. I mean, the good guy and the pretty girls are not Hispanics. We don't see ourselves in the advertising. We don't see ourselves. And the same things happen when we go to the churches. We don't see nothing that reflects our culture, our identity. And also, in reading the Bible, we have a different reading. It's a different reading that... And I was telling that it's important for the pastors always have in mind when they have an address in Hispanics, have a special message for us, because when we don't read the Bible with the same eye that you do. And this interpretation of the Bible is important for us, not for understand the Bible better, but for understand ourselves better at the light of the Bible. Because when we're moving from one society to another, and this society for us is a really complex. It's so complicated for us to live in this society. And then we want to hear what the Lord has to say to us in this world when we are like a fighting, pushing each other to fit in. Okay, now we're going to focus in the history a little bit of the Catholicism, because the Catholicism is a Hispanic Catholicism or Latin American Catholicism. It has shaped our spirituality. Even so, 500 years later, it is still remains all that tradition that the Spaniards brought from Spain. And let me tell you that Catholicism in Latin America is quite different than the Catholicism in the United States. Even so that the Catholic Church here, they did a statement saying that the Catholics coming from the Latin America, they need to be evangelized. And when the Catholics come here, I mean the Hispanics, they don't recognize the Catholic Church as the same. See, this Catholic Church, I don't see any difference between the Catholic Church and the Protestant churches, the people say. They look the same, and then for us it's not different. And let me tell you why. Okay. The Catholicism in Latin America is the result of several elements. First of all, at the same time when the Spanish came, they discovered America, it was the same year that they expelled the Muslims from Spain. Remember that the Muslims were there for 200 years. At that time, they made the Spanish became a close people, resistant to the difference to the others. In those 200 years, they never wanted to approach or to share their views with the Muslims. They never thought, well, why wouldn't they start sharing with the Muslim our beliefs, or just to start talking? I mean, I didn't say to convert them, no, it was just to have a relationship. They never did. They brought that to America, that closeness, their intolerance is something that they brought with them. The Spaniards brought to Latin or to America all the beliefs that weren't too medieval. They have a fascination with miracles, with apparition, with relics, with saints. As the people that came to America, they were soldiers, and they weren't the ones that were in charge to do the evangelization. They came really a few priests among them. And one of the commitments that they had is to evangelize the Indians here. When they weren't sent to America, it was the king gave them, okay, I'm going to give you these 100 Indians to war for you, but they are going to be your property. But you had to, the only request is you had to evangelize them. It was, I mean, a soldier or what they knew about that. It was just all that thing that they have, like mostly grasp on reliques and things that they hang in here and there. When the Protestant and Catholic Reformation began, at the same time, that here that the Spanish brought the Inquisition. There in Spain, Inquisition was to fight the Muslims and also the Jews and the witches. And here, the Inquisition was to fight the new idea, new belief that came, and mostly the whatever here that seems Lutheranism or Calvinism. That was the main task of the Inquisition here in the Latin America, to fight against Protestants. And that was shaping, I mean, the minds of we Latin America to be intolerant against others that were not Catholic. Let me tell you that I grew up in the Methodist Church. And when I was a child, I was so ashamed to say that I was Protestant. Because our church wasn't a small little church that nobody, as if the we went to not be noticed among the society. It was so tiny. And no one of my classmates was Protestant but me. And sometimes they didn't invite me to go with them because they knew that I was, the Protestant, they don't dance or they don't go to parties or they don't do that. And I was isolated since I was a child. And then sometimes the people pass by our church and throw stones against the church.
Where was this and where's the town?
It was in Durango, but it was happening so long in all the country. That's
in Mexico?
In Mexico, right. And because, you know, like 500 years after that, we weren't still, I mean, arise, but we Protestants. And then the strategies of evangelization of the Spaniards was to destroy the temples of the Indians and to rebuild their Catholic temples. And that's a way to bring the people into the Catholic Church. And also to, the first thing that they do when they conquer a town was to bring the king or the prince of that town it to burn their feet as a way to, as all the town was witnessing that, and then until this king accept to be Christian, and then all the town become Christian too. It's as when they were in market with us iron that they market the cattle that were marking the Indians as a way to, as they received town, they were not able to identify their people from the other town. The only way was to mark it. And there is a story that say that a king, one of these kings that was being born in his feet, he said, you have to accept, you must accept to be Christian. He said, well, why do you want that I accept to be Christian anyway? I mean, I don't see why. Well, if you accept to be Christian, then you are going to, when you die, you will go to heaven. And then he turned his head and said, are you guys going to be in heaven too? Yes, we will. Then I said, no, no, thank you. It's enough to have you here and to meet you again there. There is a story that there in one of the last reducts of the Indians was a special temple was dedicated to a goddess that was Tonantzin. Even that her temple was destroyed, the Indians still were placing their offerings, etc. And then it was at the time when the Virgin of Guadalupe appears. There is the story, you know the story, was an Indian that was sanctified last week by the Pope. This Indian, Juan Diego, he was walking by close to this was the former temple, was destroyed. And suddenly, a woman appeared to him. He asked him to go with the bishop and to build a church there. And then, but he was surprised to hear that this apparition was speaking to him in his own language. And then she was, she told him that she was the Virgin Mary, but her face was brown. And then he went to the bishop, he told him, the Virgin one, and the bishop, he didn't believe, why the Virgin is going to appear to you, not to me? And then she came back, and the next day the Virgin came again, he told the Virgin that what the bishop said. And then the bishop told him, well, I'm going to give you a proof. And go, do you see that roses? It was in December. In December they are no flowers. Okay. Put those flowers and take to the bishop and tell him that I am sending this proof. And then he put his, he has an, like a kind of blanket here. He put the, grabbed all those flowers and he went to the bishop. He told him about this. And when he opened his kind of blanket here, then the stamp of the Virgin was on his blanket. And then the bishop, then at the time, he believed and he built this church. That's been, since then, the most important temple, not just in Mexico, but in Latin America. Well, there is two versions. One version is that it was an strategy of the Spaniards to conquer the last reduct of the Indians. It made them all become Catholics, because since at this moment there was no more resistance. Others say that it was an strategy of the Indians. That way they can rebuild their temple of their old, of their beloved goddesses with the same face, just the clothes are different. The truth is, there are too many stories, and there are two about the Virgin. Let me tell you one. One, it was written by Octavio Paz, who was a Nobel Prize winner. Right. He did a really anthropological study. When the Spaniards came to Mexico, which was the first country that they conquered, as they were the soldiers and they didn't know what they were going to find, they came alone. I mean, they left their families, their women behind. And what they did here was that they raped the women. As if you visit Mexico, we Mexicans are more mixed than other countries. You can identify how we Mexicans, because we are almost the same. I mean, browns. And if you go to South America, the people are more blonde, and or in other countries are more Indians, in Peru or in the Caribbean, there are more blacks, etc. But we Mexicans, we are more more mixed than the others, more mixed with the Spaniards and Indians. It's because when the Spaniards become conquering the other country, they already had their women here. They weren't having no mixing with the other countries, but with Mexico. And then there was this big mix of Spaniards with the Indians. But it happened that these mestizos, as we are being called, we were not accepted by their parents. Their parents denied their children. They didn't recognize, they don't even like it. And the Indians, they didn't accept, because they weren't product of this rape. And that way, that was a turn always in the heart of the Mexican. They suddenly, you see that woman that looks like we are, it's like God is telling us, I accept you as you are. And that way the Mexican embrace, that's the surrounded, that love to this Virgin, because it's a loving mother that is always there, even no matter what you are, that product or you are, that mestizo, I am mestiza as you are. And when the Mexicans are coming to the United States, they always bring the Virgin. Wherever they go, they have the Virgin present. And there is something that we Lutherans are we having encounters with the Hispanics. What are we are going to do with this? It's something that we are facing all the time. I have my own version when we are having this encounter of identity. I told them, the people here needs the Virgin also for two situations. First, if you see our liturgy, we don't have female figures in our liturgies. Always are male-centered. And we need more female personages in our liturgies. And secondly, as we are rejected for this society, as we were at those times when the Spaniards didn't accept us, or the Indians either didn't accept us, we also need that model to tell them, we love you, and we are the voice of the Lord telling you, we love you. That is so, I mean, you will see here that the Virgin appears more here than in Mexico. All the time that we watch the Spanish television, we always appear and the Virgin appears. In LA, she appears every week. In a billboard, in the trees. Because when you feel more rejected, by even for your own church, you need that counsel, that love. And sometimes I was telling the pastor, what we can do? Well, as soon as the people start feeling that God loves us, and that God is like a mother at the embrace, you don't need to be worried for the Virgin. But mankind is something that is surrounded our identity, our culture, our beliefs. And I think so that we all need that mother that we left behind. But we are always presenting to the Father. And the strong father that we have been having all the time with the Spaniards.
Are you saying that in your ministry now that it is helpful for you to present the Virgin and say, okay, as an image of God, even as your ministry is a Protestant ministry, that you can still offer that as an option for people to say.
Let me tell you what happened among them. We are here, Lutherans, are going to tell you what happened among the Hispanic Lutherans. We have two corrientes. How to say that in English?
Parents.
Currents? Okay, among us. We have the, what we call the real Lutherans, with parentheses, they born in the Lutheran church, that they grow up in the Lutheran church, they call themselves, that we are really Lutherans. Uh-huh. We are the real Lutherans.
Oh, yeah.
My husband is one of those
here. Okay.
Because he became Lutheran when he was like 6 or 7 years old.
Uh-huh.
That is a way. We have also the others that are coming from the Catholic Church.
Right.
There are a lot of pastors that are coming from the Catholic Church because they were former priests. When they married, they became pastors. We have this one. And we have the new one that is coming from the Pentecostal Church.
Okay.
We have a large number of pastors and congregations coming from the Pentecostal Church.
Mm-hmm.
And these two are always in conflict.
Mm-hmm.
When we have Nidhis and God, these two are in conflict. Because these are pushing the presence of the Virgin of Guadalupe in the churches. And these are rejected.
Mm-hmm.
And these here are like those that have this, the last word.
I didn't understand. Those are like what?
They have the last word because they are the real Lutheran. They say what is supposed to be accepted or not accepted in the Lutheran Church.
The real Lutherans are the keepers of Orthodoxy.
Right, the Orthodoxy. Say
but I would say at my seminary where I teach, for example, Jose David Rodriguez, who's Puerto Rican, has introduced us to the Virgin of Guadalupe as a good part of Hispanic Lutheranism that can be brought into the Lutheran tradition too, I think. I mean, we celebrate her day and stuff. I forget what day it is.
It's 12th of
December, right?
December,
yeah.
Right. December 12th.
So there are some lifelong Lutherans. Like, what does your husband think?
Well, he's the one that said that, there is a special word that said that is, how the theologian said about something that is bringing into the church that it isn't, Luther said that word. But I think
adiaphora?
Adiaphora. The Virgin is an adiaphora.
Uh-huh.
That means that it doesn't matter if it's there or not. I mean, what is the color of the tablecloth? Mm-hmm. It doesn't add or taking away nothing from your belief. But I think that the adiaphoras, those are built in the culture. Those are cultural elements.
Mm-hmm.
And these cultural elements, for us, from my point of view, is like a way to fight the cultural elements that Lutheran Church already have in place. But it is not really as like a diaphora by itself, because it has too much to say to the Hispanic spirituality. Because the presence of the Virgin there at the altar is telling, for me, is telling too much when I am taking the communion. The presence of the Lord at that moment, for me, is the only presence that must be there. Bringing the Virgin at that moment, it is too much. But anyhow, those real Lutherans tell them, as soon as the people start feeling the Lord is a mother too,
mm-hmm.
as soon as the church embracing us, that's for me the most important thing. The church is not accepting and embracing us. For example, if we are accepted, sometimes the church is inviting the Latinos to be members in the church. But are they in the council? Are members in the council? They are not. Maybe we are present and here and there. Are we present, and for example, at the ENCLA highest level, do we have persons that are taking decision for us? And then sometimes we need those kind of shelters for this rejection. Mm-hmm. But that's for the theology. I am not a theologian. I am a lay person, but I was always been interested in this topic because it's affecting our churches. But we don't reject the Pentecostal wing is rejecting so close. Mm-hmm. We don't, with this line or this string are not rejecting the religion. Sometimes we do have celebration and we tell the people, well, as she identified herself as the mother of Jesus Christ, and we start thinking as a disciple of Jesus. A disciple of Jesus that follow what Jesus said.
Now, I'd always has heard that the mainstream Protestant churches were actually losing their membership to the Pentecostals, but this seems to be going the other way. What are the reasons that are bringing the Pentecostals along with Catholics into the Lutheran Church? Is that a sizable movement? I mean, you know,
we'd
be happy if it was in some way, just because the rigidity of the Pentecostals is terrifying.
Let me tell you, the first day I told the people here that I am not a critic of what is happening in the Lutheran Church. I like to do analysis. Sometimes the people are asking, why are you criticizing the Lutheran? I know when you are doing analysis, you have to present the truth. Sometimes it's true, it doesn't like us. Happened that on those 10 years that I told you that the Lutheran Church set a goal saying that we are going to have a goal that 10 years we will become 20% or reflecting what the numbers are in the society in our church. And those numbers were not moving. They were always at 2.5%. There were some tendency to start inviting the Pentecostal churches to become Lutheran, as a whole, I mean. As they were not able to support their pastors, they were not, okay, you can come. And then we had complete Pentecostal churches that became Lutheran.
Wow. Really? Where?
Where? And all over the country.
In Mexico.
Not here, in the United States. Oh. That's why we have this the Pentecostal wing. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of Pentecostal pastors knocking the Lutheran door saying, well, can you please rent me? We have this group, can you please rent me to your church or let us to stay and to have our services there in your church? Okay, you are welcome. And they weren't passing by, they were more and more acquainted. Why you don't come and become Lutherans? And then the whole church, the pastor knew that they weren't Lutheran, the congregation.
It doesn't make a difference.
No, they weren't following the pastor. And that's why we have we have a lot of Pentecostals that are wanting to become Lutherans, because as they don't have support from the churches, mm-hmm. that's the way they can get a salary.
But they want to maintain their own understanding. They want to be Pentecostals, but they want to be supported by the Lutheran Church.
Right. And also, as they are not having the requirements that the Lutheran Church has, they are more like lay pastors. Mm-hmm. Then the salaries are really lower.
Uh-huh. Yeah. There is a way to accept new ministry. Uh-huh. You always hear about them having so much money and everything else.
Mm-hmm. That way we have it. And those Catholic areas are former priests. They are really people that know what they were doing, that they have all the formation, and they happen that they married, and they decide, well, this church is closer to our religion. And we have a large number of from the Catholic priest. And that's why in the Lutheran times, that I think so that the fewer, but that the ones that are breaking the waters among the. Yeah. There are some of these Lutherans that are more close to the Catholic wing, mm-hmm. and they are accepting the presence of the Virgin of Guadalupe. Mm-hmm. These are the apostles.
Yeah.
They do believe in the Virgin of Guadalupe, but they are more like accepting because it's part of the culture. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm going to tell you why this Catholicism in Latin America is quite different from the Catholicism in the United States. The Catholicism that came to Mexico and later to Latin America was the pre-Concilium of Trento. As maybe you know better than I do, that we have here the Reform, the Protestant Reform, the Lutheran, and this is your case. The Catholics, when they saw this movement, they decided to do their own reform as a matter to fight the Protestant Reform. And they, when they gathered, they could call the Concilium of Trento, was the, sometimes it was called the Contra-Reform. And there was this Concilium of Trento was in 1545. I want just to summarize because I don't have all the time to do. What the Catholics did, first of all, was to go into a deep reform of all their ethic problem that I had at the time. It was like cleaning the house. It's something that the reform was finding, like that all the corruption among the clergy, they tried to they clean it up, that up. Yes. And then also do a lot of reform, and they don't longer accept to, for example, the bishophood, where by at the time you could buy you being a bishop, and also there's requirement for age and education. At the time, the education before the Concilium of Trento was done in the monasteries, and they weren't teaching each other, and they weren't a lot of begging priests. They were from town to town begging food and money, and that was the idea to be a priest, to be a poor person that was begging for the or was just and that mysticism that they were close in that monasteries and just being in contemplation, that was changed radically. Those begging priests disappear, all that order disappear, and they began having a formal a preparation for their priests. And they opened the seminaries. It was a requirement to go to the seminary. It was a requirement also to go from the priesthood to the bishophood, to the ascending, no buying that position. And the Jesuits were born at this time, were an important key of all these reforms. And they reaffirmed the authority of the Pope. That's what the Pope said. It was that had the authority to say about the theology of the Catholics. also, well, at that time also you can be a priest in one place and to live in another place. That also ended. You had to live in the place when you were a priest or bishop. But also they reaffirmed the seventh sacrament. There was a reaffirmation. They reaffirmed the purgatory and also the sacrifices as a way of getting your sins. You had to do penitence. And then the justification, you receive justification through faith, hope, and charity. You can get justification through your deeds also. But this concilium shaped what is the mother Catholic Church. Do you remember that since this time, they didn't have another concilium until the Second Vatican Concilium in the 60s? What was said at that time was valid for all these 500 years. But it was a really a way that they recovered a lot of territories in Europe that they were gained by the Protestant reform. They took back those. But it happened that this Catholicism was a Catholicism that brought to the United States, the Irish and the Italians. But this new Catholicism, it didn't reach the Spain. And it didn't reach, in consequence, Latin America. That's why our Catholicism there is with all that old beliefs or medieval beliefs that the Catholic Church just whipped out with this concilium. It was this Catholicism looks more like a Protestant. The Church looks more like you have not all that image that we have there in the Catholic Church. When you get into in Mexico in a Catholic Church, you see all the saints there with those marble side that look at like following you when you walk. They are following you with wigs and everything that's and they take all is a copy of Spain with all that procession that they take and all that saints and virgins and do the procession, etc. That way that way the Catholics here in the United States say we need to evangelize those Catholics, those Latin American Catholics, because they are still in another thing. And then that's why a Catholic priest says that it was easier for the Catholics that are coming from Latin America to walk into the Pentecostal Church. Because the Catholics call this the popular Catholicism. Mm-hmm. It's popular by the implications of the pueblo, right? Pueblo.
City.
The villages.
Like the all these communities is Catholicism that is not what the hierarchy or the clergy believe. It's what the people believe. They call the popular Catholicism. It is why this is because this popular Catholicism has the same characteristics are so similar to Pentecostal. One is the belief on miracles that is happening every time. And the other one is the poverty. I mean, here, the priest and the Catholic, they do, their votes of poverty. Mm-hmm. And the Pentecostal Church, they born and target the poor.
Are you referring to the popular Catholicism? Is the Catholicism that evolved in Mexico without the effect of the Council of Trent?
Right.
Okay.
That's what the Catholics call the popular Catholics.
Right, in Mexico.
And even so here in the United States, because the Latinos are bringing that popular Catholicism, right, even here in the United States.
Okay, but it's so the Catholicism that didn't get affected by the Council of Trent.
That's what
is,
the,
is the, right.
The, yeah. Latino, the Catholicism that came to the United States was the one that was under the reform of the Council of Trent.
Right, and the popular Catholicism is similar to evangelicalism.
It's similar, what they say, this Catholic priest to the Pentecostals.
Right.
Are more, they're more similar. That's why the people walk now, the Catholic Church is really lost in grounds.
Mm-hmm.
Of his members that are walking out to into the Pentecostal churches,
right,
because the Catholics, they are, mm-hmm, so similar in that two ways that they believe in miracles,
mm-hmm,
and the work among the poor.
Yeah. Okay.
The Pentecostals don't believe in the saints.
No, they don't believe in saints, but they believe in miracles. And there is the most popular church among the Hispanics now here in the United States and of all Latin America is a church that's called La Iglesia Universal del Pueblo de Dios, the Universal Church of People of God. That is growing up like and fire, it's got fire. I mean, wherever it goes, it grows. Two or three years, you will see 500,000 people gathering. But if you watch the TV, they have a lot of, they have two characteristics, right? I have seen these churches because it born in Brazil. We weren't in Brazil at that time, but this church born there. It had been extended in all Latin America, and here in the United States, it's a big hit. The first thing that they do, they go and rent an old cinema, an old movie theater that has been there for years. They go and buy this building and rebuild and use the stage like they're having the center of the church. And they sell tickets. There is no free to get. They don't have offering there. But they do have to pay to get. If the people do long lines to get. First, and second, and I have never been in the church there. I have visited a lot of different denominations, but never been in the church. But what I've been watching in the TV, they always have a lot of advertising in the TV. And they sell a lot of stuff, like you are going to come and to buy the Rosa de Sharon, the Rose of Sharon. I don't know what it is. The Rosa de Sharon is that. But it's something, I don't know, what the Rosa de Sharon is. I don't know, did you know what the Rosa de Sharon is? Because the Catholics, when they are praying and they are saying the rosary, they always ask it. Rosa de Sharon.
It's a reference in the Song of Solomon where the writer says, I am the Rose of Sharon and the Lily of the Valley.
Oh, okay. Then, well, they are selling Rosas de Sharon.
Uh-huh.
And there is a way to help you with your illness and help to clean. They sell water of the Rio Jordan. They sell stones of the mine of the King Solomon. Something that never exists, they are selling. And they say the same oil. They say that you put that oil in your hand, you always will have money.
It's a miracle.
Snake
oil.
Yeah.
That's a medicine show. Right, in those churches are packed, I mean, by thousands. By thousands. There in Brazil, they, in those 10 years they have existence, 12 years. They already bought TV stations, properties. Well, it does the people that the Catholic Church is lost in, because if you see, there is the same. The people, it seems that we need something to grab. Mm-hmm. Something to grab. We have our saints, and we always are finding things in our bodies. If we are living for something that they're offering, that we can more, it's more modern, then you can grab it. Mm-hmm. As I was telling, that really the Catholic Church is worried for this tendency of it. That's why the Pope is now visiting Latin America, Mexico, mm-hmm. even that he's so sick and dying. He's there because in Mexico, a country that I ever thought that one day would be changed. Now it's changing. Mm-hmm. The Catholic Church lost people to the Pentecost. Mm-hmm. Now, let me tell you what is happening with the missions in Latin America, especially those of the mainstream churches. The first country where the Protestant churches came was Mexico. It was in 1886, something like that. At that time, we have a president that was fighting the Catholic Church. Benito Juarez, he did that. The reform took away all the properties of the Catholic, and he did a lot of reformation. He separated the state of the church. And he also invited the Presbyterians to come to Mexico as a way to fight the Catholic Church. And say, we have Protestants here start growing, then the Catholic Church is going to lose power. This president by them, he gave them a former Catholic temple. This is your temple in the middle of the center of Mexico City, where all the Catholic churches, he gave them a beautiful Catholic, former Catholic temple. This is, and then the others began coming toward the years. Methodist, let me tell you, my grandmother, she already born in the Methodist church, mm-hmm. more than 100 years ago, then my mother. So. The Lutherans came later in the 40s. But what one characteristic of all this evangelization there in Latin America is that all these denominations work together. Ecumenism was the main word there. When we were, for example, when I was a teenager, as we were not able to have a relationship with other teenagers, the only relationship that we had was with the Baptist Church. We were all the time with the youth group there to play volleyball, to do camps, etc. In Guatemala, when we arrived there, we saw that the Presbyterians and Methodists, they were like one, working together. So that was really important in Latin America. The communion of all these mainstream denominations working together into evangelization in Latin America. Okay. I see so that we can stop here because the time is so But
More tomorrow,
right?
What year did you say Juarez was busy fighting the Catholic Church in
1886?
Was
1886 was the reform in Mexico with this president that...
Was that a good thing that Benito Juarez was fighting the Catholics? Because Benito Juarez is known to be the Abraham Lincoln of Mexico. the best president there ever was, Benito Juarez.
Right. Isn't that the May 5th celebration day?
That's when we be France.
No, that's not France. But Benito Juarez was the only One Indian president that we have had in Mexico. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then, he said, it was like Abraham Lincoln with all the reforms that he did in Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you going to continue on with this tomorrow?
Tomorrow, right.
Good, thanks.
Thank you.
Today. You just wait. Wait a few minutes. If you don't like the weather, don't really just stick around 5 minutes.
That's right.
Thank you for coming.
Sure.
Right. 5 o'clock, then.
That's right.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Yeah.